again, welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast, your weekly dose of talking about watching soccer on TV, online, and apps. Coming up on episode 31, we discuss Univision's coverage of Mexico against USA, the finals of the U20 World Cup and Toulon tournament, and plans for basically how much the Premier League could change the weekend fixture kickoff times in the future. Plus that and much, much more. My name is Christopher Harris, a.k.a. The Gaffer, and I'm joined by Kartik Krishnaiyer. Kartik, in thunderstormy South Florida, are you?
Yes, I am. It's continuing to be bad weather, and had to go and come from Jacksonville the other day for a NPSL game in awful weather. Driving up to Stewart tonight in similar weather for another NPSL game that I'll be calling. So it's a reminder as to why, even though the calendar, and you and I have talked about the calendar before, why the calendar might be advantageous for people in the north, why the American soccer calendar, which is, of course, the opposite of the European football calendar, is not so good for us in Florida.
Yeah, and I guess we'll have to tackle that, too, if and when the David Beckham team happens in Miami, maybe 2020 or sooner, perhaps. But for me, Kartik, I'm actually, in terms of the weather, I'm on the other side of the Atlantic, as you know. I'm on vacation with my family here for a couple of weeks. So I'm looking outside the window right now, Kartik. It's a beautiful, blue, sunny day, probably about 70 degrees, nice breeze, and it's picture-perfect weather, which I know is very rare for this part of the world. But looking outside the window, I'm actually outside in the countryside, looking out through the window, and I just see sheep and rolling hills, and really glad to be here. And for my kids, it's the first time they've ever been to... I'm in Shropshire, so about 500 yards from the Welsh border, and then next week, actually this weekend, I'll be heading down south to South Wales, to see my family down there, but also to go, I'm sure, visit Liberty Stadium, probably pick up some souvenirs from the club shop there. But it's a good part of the world. But football, we got lots of football and soccer going on in this past week, and of course the Confederations Cup coming up later this weekend. Actually, and on this podcast too, a little bit later, we go in depth in terms of Telemundo and their plans of coverage of the Confederations Cup. So a lot to look forward to there. So Kartik, let's start off by talking about what you've been watching this week. And I'm particularly interested too in the Mexico-USA game. I missed it. My flight was left probably about 2 hours before kickoff. So I was in flight, and unfortunately there was no satellite TV on the plane, so I didn't get to catch the game. I did see the result and read the stories. But what was the coverage like on Univision?
Yeah, if you fly British Airways, they're still in the Stone Age as far as Wi-Fi and satellite TV. So I'm not sure if you flew BA, but that's my biggest complaint about BA. Anyway, Mexico USA was on Univision. I did not watch them into the Fox coverage. I kind of hit my threshold for Fox and their over promotion with, well, let me correct myself. I should not say I did not watch a minute of the Fox coverage. I watched the intro on Fox, the loud intro, and I couldn't bear to watch continue watching when they kicked it to the studio team of Rob Stone and Alexi Lalas, and I'm assuming Eric Winalda. So I switched to Univision at that very moment and watched the duration of the night on Univision because it was the loud intro and the hyperbole in the intro, which, is become customary at Fox, and I understand it's the way Fox covers all sporting events, not just soccer. Mm-hmm. But I thought, oh gosh, I can't put up with an hour and a half pregame of this and 2 hour match and whatever postgame. I'm just going to bail out now instead of being frustrated and being one of those people who are frustrated and complains about it. And then everybody says, well, you could have watched the game on Univision. So I watched the game on Univision. My Spanish is limited. I do understand enough to kind of pick up on certain things, as was evidenced again last night at a PSL game I was at where players were speaking in Spanish, and then they assumed I didn't know what they were saying, and I did. I do know the language well enough to pick up on these things. And Miguel Herrera, I think being on the broadcast adds a lot of color. We know he's a colorful character. That fiery streak is what endeared so many people to him after he became Mexican manager in 2013, following the succession of Chepo and Vukovic, and then there was another manager in there also that failed. But it was also that fiery personality that got him the sack after the Gold Cup in 2015 and an alleged incident at Philadelphia Airport. He brings that fire to the broadcast and to the post game and pregame coverage, which I absolutely love. And he was pretty critical of how Mexico set up in this game and how they played. I mean, I think one of Herrera's observations was that Bruce Arena, the U.S. manager, was able to push Mexico into wide areas. So even though Mexico on paper had 74% possession or 73% possession, a lot of the possession was harmless. Now, keep in mind, Juan Carlos Osorio is Herrera's successor. You had the interim period of Tuca Ferretti, the Tigres coach, but he was never going to be the permanent manager. So he is critiquing his direct replacement. Let's keep that in mind. But I thought that was a very good point, because Osorio is a manager I like. Obviously managed two different teams in Major League Soccer, went to school in the United States, coached for 3 years at Manchester City under Kevin Keegan. So I, he's this kind of very cosmopolitan background, speaks very, very good English, obviously, for someone who just came to the U.S. to work in England. And I tend to like him, and I like how meticulous he is in his note-taking and how aggressive he is in kind of his tactical setup. But in this game, he got outwitted by Bruce Arena, and Herrera made that clear. I think Chelo Balboa was very, very good in terms of his analysis of what the U.S. was trying to do, which is to play to their strengths. Mm-hmm. You have one really technical player in Christian Pulisic, one world-class player. Potentially, obviously, he's getting close to that level at Dortmund already. The rest of your team have certain strengths, as Balboa put it. I would view it as weaknesses, technical weaknesses, a technically deficient squad. So Arena set up a team that was determined to play on the break, but also to be somewhat open in midfield, which is how they got caught on a counter and gave up a goal. A team that was a setup in a way that they were going to get guys when they broke on the counter, they were going to get guys forward, and that would lead them to be somewhat open. So obviously, there was the issue of the U.S.'s success on set pieces, where they didn't score, but they had a couple free headers for the likes of Omar Gonzalez. And that was another critique of Miguel Herrera, that the U.S. playing on the break allowed Mexico's defenders, who weren't necessarily terribly well organized, to clear the ball for corners, and every time there was a corner for the U.S., it was dangerous. So that was their observations. Pablo Ramirez was the match analyst or co-commentator, and he made some of these same points during the broadcast. The production level on Univision is very good. The enthusiasm, obviously, of the crew is outstanding. They have as much experience covering soccer as anyone in this country, so you would expect a top-rate broadcast. Quite frankly, it's quite a contrast after watching Fox to watch Univision. And when U.S. games are on ESPN, I will watch them on ESPN. But when they're on Fox, I think I'm just going to continue to watch Univision.
Yeah, that's one of those things. I think it's you're not the. I mean, there's a lot of people that do the same thing, Kartik. I know that from Fox's point of view too. I think in many ways. I didn't hear a lot of negatives about this broadcast from Fox, from readers, and also people posting.
Let me say that Fox does appeal to a certain segment of fans. It just is not the segment I fall into. Yeah. So maybe they should just continue what they're doing, because I think those who like Fox's broadcasting style, that set of fans need to be spoken for, and they're fitting into the Fox mold. Fox mold. Fox speaks to them more than ESPN or NBC. Or Univision or Telemundo does. So, we can complain all we want, and other football fans, soccer fans can complain about Fox. We have an alternative. We can watch that alternative instead of complaining. That's where I'm at now.
Right. Yeah, and that's the thing too. Even with the Confederations Cup, there's a lot of alternatives with Telemundo and Universo. And Fox, I mean, Fox has definitely improved from what they've done in the past. I mean, they still use pretty much their same old formula, which is a very formulaic type of broadcast with the obnoxious, over-the-top beginning, kind of was usually a voiceover and the kind of the 1 to 2 minute intro that they've been doing for years. But
But the thing I will say about Fox is that in the post-match analysis of this game, when I was having arguments with people about how well the U.S. played, well, in quotes, and I think it was masterclass by Arena tactically, but the U.S., it showed how limited they were and how technically deficient they were the match, in my opinion, mm-hmm. and in the opinion of several other people I've talked to. The people who give the counter-argument almost universally told me, well, but I was watching Fox and Alexi Lalas said,
yeah.
So right. So again, yeah. They speak to a certain segment of the audience.
Yeah. The biggest talking point from Fox's point of view in terms of their broadcast was Jermaine Jones, who was involved, who was on set for the first time. I believe it was pre-game, halftime, and post-match, and the feedback from readers on the website and the comments was that Jermaine's got a long way to go in terms of his English. His English isn't the greatest. That will come with time, I'm sure, as he gets more and more comfortable with that. But this might be the first of many appearances we see from Jermaine Jones. The other thing, too, is that a lot of comments from readers on worldsoccertalk.com about that they're not confident that Fox is going to do really well at the World Cup based on the coverage of the U.S.-Mexico game. And in many ways, it's kind of a big game, but it's a practice. I mean, the more hours that the crew behind the scenes, as well as the talent, are putting in, kind of revving up closer and closer to the World Cup, which is just a year away, and with the Confederations Cup, there's still a lot of concerns that, and it might be the same group too, Kartik, as you, as far as kind of just not enjoying the Fox style, but it is what it is. That's their decision, and like you said too, some people love it and it appeals to a certain crowd, but there's a lot of people that hate it too. There's not many people in between. Before we move on, anything else about the U.S.-Mexico game before we move on to finding out some of the other games you watched?
No, I just think that the immediate takeaway of how we perceive the performances of the U.S. is important, because in the World Cup next year, given the U.S.'s talent deficiency, this is probably the least talented team the U.S. is going to take into a World Cup in recent memory. I mean, certainly more lately, less talented than 2002 or 2006. And, 2010, I think the U.S. didn't have a very talented team, but a weak group. The perception of how we view the U.S.'s performances may be skewed by the matches being on Fox, based on the feedback I got. Because when the matches were on ESPN, you would have some scathing coverage of the U.S. There are people who've worked at ESPN at Fox in the past, excuse me, that moved to ESPN, and I wasn't terribly impressed with them at Fox, and then they become quite good, quite analytical at ESPN. Brian McBride is a very good example. I didn't rate him very highly when he was on UEFA pregame shows and other Fox coverage. He goes to ESPN and on ESPN FC, but there are large periods where he's not on the show, and I miss him because he gives very good analysis. I think that's the difference between the way Dan Thomas is probing him and maybe the way the host at Fox, particularly Rob Stone, kind of engage the analysts and the types of questions they ask. And again, Rob Stone, when he was at ESPN, was a little more asked different types of questions, had a different style. So again, I think it's probably more the Fox production and what they're telling the host to do than Rob Stone's actual presentation style and the types of questions he would ask. So that's my observation on Fox. Let me run through what else I watched this week, Chris. I did watch the U20 final on Fox. I thought Glenn Davis and Tony Miola were quite good in calling the game. The goal was from Dominic Calvert-Lewin of Everton, formerly Sheffield Wednesday. I actually enjoyed this final and got up to watch this final because most tournaments, including World Cups and Euros, there are teams you fall in love with, teams that are really good that then lose in the quarterfinal
Bielsa losing the round of 16. You think of Bielsa's Chile in the 2010 World Cup and how bummed everyone was when they were eliminated. Colombia in the 2014 World Cup when Brazil, the host country, essentially played an anti-football to stop them. And, you know, in some of those tournaments, there's lessons them to watch the finals, right? Mm-hmm. In this U20 World Cup, Venezuela, to me, was the best team in the tournament, and England was a close second. Yeah. So they were worthy finalists, which gave me the incentive to get up at 5:30 in the morning, get ready to watch this match, and England won. And I thought Venezuela were the better team on the night, and I thought they were the better team in the tournament, but as I said, England were the second best team in the tournament, so to me, that makes them worthy champions, because in so many of these tournaments, you get the team that was the fifth or sixth best team throughout the course of the tournament, like Portugal in the Euros, winning tournaments. So I enjoyed this, and I thought Fox did a good job with it. Sweden, France, John Champion, now on calls the game on Fox on FS1. John Champion's been on FS1. He's been on ESPN, ESPN2, BN, NBC, NBCSN, and the Sci-Fi Network in the last 6 weeks as a commentator. That's how prolific he is. And, of course, highlighted by that championship final on Wembley on BN. This was a good game. Hugo Lloris Howler gave Sweden the victory and puts France, one of the favorites, I think, going into the World Cup, in jeopardy of not qualifying. Now, they probably will qualify. Keep in mind the Dutch are in that group also, but Sweden holding their own. One other quick point. The next France game was against England in a friendly. The Sweden game was a qualifier, and there was a sending off of Raphael Varane for being the last man back and a penalty in the box, and the on Dele Alli, I believe it was, from England. Stevie Nicol was really adamant in the ESPN FC studio that this was a ridiculous call and that the referee has to have some common sense. He's not. Not arguing that he wasn't the last man back, because he wasn't. He was, and he understands letter of the law. That's a penalty, and that's a sending off. But one, this was a friendly, and in friendlies you keep 11 be 11. And he said, secondly, Varane was clumsy, right? He was actually trying to get out of the way. Right. His process of getting out of the way tripped the English player, but he made no attempt to play the ball. It wasn't malicious. It's a friendly. Just give him a yellow and get on with it. I think it's a very good point, because the letter of the law sometimes eliminates common sense from refereeing. So I quite enjoyed that Steve Nicol, who is, of course, a former defender, Liverpool legend, defender, would stick up for another defender. But I found it a compelling point, because you often wonder why referees have to go by the book. And it's because FIFA ref assessors then will or UEFA in this case, will mark them down. And they won't get the plum assignments. The referee won't get France, England again if he doesn't send off Varane in that situation, because it's it is a letter of the law call. The referee assessors need to have a little more leniency. It would be my message, and I agree with Steve Nicol. And I'm glad the point was raised. I thought that was neat, and that's what you get when you watch ESPN FC. You get a lot of thinking points like that, mm-hmm. which you don't necessarily get on other shows.
Absolutely. So some of the matches I watched this past week, I saw the Sweden against US women's national team, which was on the Thursday, and that was on actually it was on ESPN2 with Ian Dark commentating and Julie Foudy co-commentating. I really thought the chemistry between the two of them was fantastic. It was entertaining. It was a pleasure to listen to, and I hope really that Fox tries to get Ian Dark for the World Cup next summer. I know that about a year ago or 2 years ago, we ran a story from one of our sources that the Fox was trying to hire Ian Dark. A lot has changed in the last couple of years, with Fox continuing to kind of focus on more US commentators. But I hope there's a place there for Ian Dark in the World Cup, because he definitely is such a pleasure to listen to. US Trinidad against Tobago, I watched that game, and some good commentary there by John Strong and Stu Holden. You talked about a few minutes ago, Kartik, about Alexi Lalas. To me, it seems that Alexi Lalas, he seemed smarter at ESPN. And a good example of this is at Fox now, at the halftime show. While I enjoy watching Fernando Fiore, and he's entertaining, it's kind of a comedy show. And we had Fernando Fiore put on an Eagles hat at halftime, kind of just joking with Lalas and Rob Stone. And it all depends what you're looking for. If you're looking for entertainment, you've got it right there. But it diminishes Alas's role in terms of some of his clear-cut insight and analysis, and we're missing that. So if Fox wants that, that's what they're getting. Some of the other matches I watched the Sweden-France game, as you did, Kartik, John Champion, and Kevin Kilbane on the commentary. A great first half, a poor second half, and then with the last kick of the game, Sweden wins it from the halfway line after Hugo Lloris's mistake when he's caught outside the area. I watched the Cameroon against Morocco, African Cup of Nations 2019 qualifier. And we had Phil Shane doing the pregame and halftime on that one. And a name I'm not familiar with, but Robbie Knock as the commentator. This one was not the easiest match to watch, if anyone watched it. Reason being is that both teams were wearing red and green strips kits. So different color style, a different style of shirts, but still both teams had red and green. So that got a little bit confusing sometimes watching that one. Scotland against England on FS2. Watched this one. Ian Joy was hosting, so it was good to hear his voice again. And then commentary by Bill Leslie and Andy Hinchcliffe. And this was a game that after Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain scored the goal, I walked away for a few minutes, I think, to get something, came back, and I saw the scoreline. It was 2-2. So I missed a flurry of goals, well, two goals from Scotland from free kicks, and then the last-minute goal from Harry Kane. A nice finish there. I watched the England against Ivory Coast final from Toulon, the Toulon tournament, and this one was on BN Sports in Espanol, so it was in Spanish. But just as you said before too, Kartik, with Venezuela against England in the U20 World Cup final, with Venezuela looking the better team, which I agree with, it was the same thing in the Toulon final too, with Ivory Coast looking the better team against England, but England went on to win that match. So a good weekend for England, and a last-minute equaliser from Harry Kane. So everything was good there from England's perspective.
Yeah, I just worry that with England winning all these youth tournaments, because I mean the U20 World Cup is actually a much bigger deal in the U.S. than it is in England, and American players get overhyped based on their performances in U20 World Cups. Although the U.S. has a bad habit of being eliminated at the quarterfinal stage, fourth time in the last five or six tournaments that's happened. That's where the U.S. is bowed out, and generally in extra time or penalty kicks. Much like England in the regular World Cup, right, in the Senior World Cup quarterfinals, penalty kicks or extra time. I just worry that now with the Toulon tournament and particularly the U20 World Cup, we're going to have an overhyping of some of these young English players. We're already hearing cries of the golden generation in the wake of the U20 World Cup final, and we know what the English media can do to young players. Chris, you and I have both lived that for a couple decades now. So
yeah, it's a long way to go.
I certainly hope that doesn't happen.
Yeah, long way to go. There's some positive signs there. So I do want to give a shout out to our sponsor, and that is SeatGeek. And buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated, but there is a better, simpler way to buy, and that's with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. And with SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite soccer team or musician in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. Now, in the past several weeks, I've been using the SeatGeek app on my phone to look for tickets for some of the upcoming friendlies. In my case, for Swansea City playing against Philadelphia Union, North Carolina FC and Richmond Kickers. And the app's really easy to use, and you can find what you're looking for just in usually a few seconds. It's designed to help make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. It saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Best of all, my listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and then enter promo code WSTPOD today. That's promo code WSTPOD for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Now, Kartik, on to TV streaming news. Quite a bit of news coming out this week. I'll have you kick it off.
Yeah, so we talked about this on the show. It seems like ad nauseum every week, but NBC Sports, it's now confirmed, did see a lower Premier League audience after scheduling changes in year one of the new deal. NBC Sports had its lowest TV coverage for Premier League coverage this past season in their four seasons that they've had. The deal, as scheduling changes during the first year of a new deal, did not work in the network's favor. It was also the first year of a deal internationally for other carriers and in the UK for Sky and BT. Games across NBC, NBC, SN, USA, and CNBC during this past season averaged 420,000 viewers, down from what was a record 514,000 viewers on average last season. So that's a pretty significant drop. It's about a drop of 20% or more. This coverage averaged close to 480,000 viewers the previous year before that, the 2014-2015 season. NBC Sports average is still far above what they inherited from Fox, ESPN, ESPN2, Fox Soccer, etc., which was 220,000 in the 12-13 season. Several scheduling changes hurt NBC, and I think this is important to note, even though I think just in general maybe we've hit a point of diminishing returns with some of the soccer coverage in the country, and we've talked about that before. The shift of the Manchester Derby, which had happened in more desirable time slots in the past, sometimes even the 4 o'clock kickoff on Sunday, or a kickoff that was more akin to getting good ratings, were moved. And this was because of a shift with the UK. The UK matches, it's the selection of BT and Sky for certain matches in their prime spots. Now for BT, it's the 12:30 p.m. Saturday kickoff, which is 7:30 a.m. here. And keep in mind, that's 15 minutes earlier than it used to be. That does make a difference for some people. It used to be 7:45 a.m. And then also for Sky's prime game, which is the 11 o'clock kickoff, 11 a.m. kickoff here, 4 p.m. kickoff there on Sundays. There was also a shift in games from USA Network to CNBC. That made a big difference. USA's audience last season for those matches was 50% higher than CNBC's was this season. USA only had three matches this year. That's just also a byproduct of those networks' general ratings. CNBC's ratings are never very high. They do appeal to kind of a higher end demographically and wealth-wise, per capita income-wise, consumer, whereas USA is one of the top-rated cable channels on television in the United States. So I think that may have been a greater factor than the actual quality of league or selection of games in that case. It is worth noting, though, while TV numbers were down, and maybe this is part of a trend across sports, across just television in general in the United States, NBC Sports Digital had its best Premier League season among live minutes streamed. This season also saw eight of the 10 most live streamed matches for the Premier League on record in the United States. So that is a positive to go along with all the kind of negative or mixed messages from television.
Yeah, I think overall, I think NBC Sports are probably pretty satisfied with the numbers. Yes, it's lower than what it was last year and the year before. But like you said, too, I mean, viewer habits are shifting. A lot more people watching games, streaming them on whether it's devices or laptops, etc. So those numbers are increasing, and those that have been the best season ever for those numbers for the NBC. And as we've seen on television too, it's tough because they're dictated in many ways by what happens in the UK and with BT Sport and Sky with their schedules. They're the ones that pick up the TV times where games are shifted. And as a result, some of the less favorable games, well, the most favorable games are in time slots which are not as favorable for NBC. So, for example, the 11 o'clock on Sundays, the big match on the East Coast in the United States on Sundays, that's great. That's wonderful. But 99% of those games have been on NBCSN, and I think only one of them, well, and that was what, a second half was on the NBC over the air network. So they can't get as bigger numbers for games like that when they're not on the big over the air network. But good news overall there. I mean, it's not doom and gloom. I think it's just.
I think that the Premier League catered to NBC with the selection of matches a little bit in those first three seasons, because if you remember back in the days when Fox and ESPN had the contract, that 12:30 p.m. Eastern time game, 5:30 British Standard time game, that NBC so often in their first 3 years had a showcase game to put on NBC over the air in the United States, was a game like Fulham versus Reading. Or a game involving one strong team would be Manchester City versus Reading, type of thing. When the rights in this country were held by Fox and ESPN, because those games would end up on Fox Soccer Channel. So I think that some of the selection of games prior to this season, for the first three seasons, NBC's first contract, might have been. To their benefit, and might have been conscious on the part of the Premier League to increase numbers in the U.S., which certainly worked.
Plus, the other thing too is that NBC for this past season, the Premier League didn't get any bumper programming such as the Olympics. And we know the Olympics. I think the Swansea against Cardiff game was, it was on NBC, but they had the Olympics right on before it, and I think that Swansea Cardiff game got, I think, 1.2 million or something like that. It was one of the biggest numbers for the entire season, simply because there was a lot of people tuning in to watch the Olympics, and then they started watching the soccer matches there. So yeah, so hopefully we'll see next season too. I mean, we've seen the drop off in quality of play, but hopefully next season maybe there's. Some other factors that will be helping NBC with the numbers. Or maybe not. We shall see. In other news, so we mentioned this last week with PlayStation View, which is a streaming service, which was hit by the news that they were no longer carrying beIN Sports. So last week I interviewed one of the executives at beIN Sports to find out what happened. And the full story is at worldsoccertalk.com. But... The real kind of base to the story is that PlayStation View was not willing to pay a fair market value for beIN Sports, the same amount of money that other streaming networks such as Fubo and Sling TV and DirecTV, actually not DirecTV now yet, but some of the services are paying. PlayStation View didn't want to pay that. So beIN Sports stood their ground and said, okay, no, we're not willing to cut our subscriber fees, which are pretty low anyway. So it looks like PlayStation View was playing hardball, hoping that that beIN Sports would give in. beIN Sports did not give in. And we've seen the same thing too with PlayStation View and Viacom. Viacom dropped all of the channels off PlayStation View because PlayStation View was not willing to pay kind of a fair market value. So unfortunately for the PSView customers, that's a big loss. I mean, with beIN Sports, I mean, whether it's La Liga, the World Cup qualifiers from CONMEBOL, Serie A, I mean, there's so many rights that that beIN Sports has. That's a big blow. So there's been a lot of people in the last couple of weeks that were PSView customers and are switching to Fubo or switching to Sling TV, etc. And there's a lot of options out there. So that's the latest on the PlayStation View beIN Sports debacle. Now back to you, Kartik, and some more news in relation to the Premier League and TV kickoff times, perhaps.
Yeah, so the Prem might be showing more matches on live UK television from 2019 to 2019-2020 season, which means fewer 3 p.m. kickoffs in the UK, 10 a.m. kickoffs, 10 a.m. Eastern time kickoffs in the United States. We mentioned this every couple of weeks on the show, but just a reminder that those games are not shown live in the UK. No game in any competition is shown live at that time at 3 p.m. And the idea is for football fans to go to their local football ground and watch their local club, be it a Premier League club or a club in League Two or the conference, right? So that is why that is the traditional kickoff time for games. But we've already seen so many Premier League games shifted, and oftentimes only four or five games when there are 10 games every weekend kicking off at that time. Now we might even have fewer. Sometimes we have as many as seven kicking off at that time. So I'm not saying it's four or five every week, but we might have even fewer based on this report. There have been calls for the Premier League to make every game available live. Simon Jordan, who was the chairman of Crystal Palace until 2010-ish, told the Telegraph last month, Telegraph Business of Sport Conference, a failure to do so risks the crash in broadcast markets rights in the market, similar to the 2008 global financial crisis. It is a warning worth heeding, because we are seeing, I think, television networks have less of an ability to offer the kind of money in broadcast rights fees that they have to leagues like the Premier League in the past. And if you don't make the product more enticing, you have a problem. Now, here in the United States, every match is available live, thanks to NBC's contract with the Premier League. But that is not the case in the United Kingdom. But if you make every match available live, what does that do to the BBC's BBC's signature match of the day program? What does it do to the BBC's contract for highlights and bumper rights from the Premier League? So that's a whole nother element of this. You could say, oh, well, let's just make every game live. But the reason why part of the protection of the BBC and the Match of the Day program and the Match of the Day franchise, which is the biggest franchise in football in the UK, or arguably the biggest, of a Sky might make a case, Soccer Sunday, etc. Goals on Sunday is a bigger franchise. But is to protect that BBC programming, right? Mm-hmm. And for so many Premier League viewers in the UK to watch Match of the Day every Saturday, Match of the Day 2 every Sunday, because they're not seeing those games live. Well, they're seeing the Sunday games live, but the Saturday games live, Match of the Day. So there's no easy answer, but this will continue to play out, I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely. I don't see the Premier League anytime soon making every game available on television in the UK. Maybe a decade from now, perhaps, maybe that might happen. So a little bit, from Simon Jordan's perspective, a little bit ambitious goals there. But and with the Premier League thinking about changing it in the UK, where over the course of a season, over 200 games would be shown live in the UK, that means that if it did happen, they would have to carve out probably a new time slot. And the one that I would be looking at is probably the 6 p.m. UK time on a Sunday, which is 1 p.m. US time on the Eastern Coast. So that you could have, say, you could have on a typical Sunday, you could have the 8:30 in the morning kickoff, the early kickoff Eastern time, and then have the 11 o'clock kickoff. And then once finished, maybe have a 1 o'clock kickoff Eastern time. The challenge with that is sometimes on in many parts of England on Sundays, the trains aren't running all the time, and so sometimes it's harder to get around. But hopefully, as train times improve, they can do that where the fans won't grumble too much. They're probably going to grumble anyway. But that's what I'm looking at, is possibly that as a new time slot, and that could take up, because I think roughly right now, I think there's 160 games that are shown live over the course of an English season. And that's it out of 380. So going up to 200, that's what I'm thinking, is that they'll carve out a new time slot. And also too, if it is a 1 p.m. Eastern kickoff, that should be pretty favorable. Well, for Asia, I mean, it would be later. Actually, no. That'd be the middle of the night. Never mind. But anyway, for the U.S., it would be a great time slot. But we'll have to wait and see what happens there. Now, Kartik, we're going to skip the TV ratings section for this week. We will have all of the numbers at worldsoccertalk.com in our weekly roundup of all the games, which include the US-Mexico game, those numbers from Univision Fox, as well as the MLS games and everything else in terms of the World Cup qualifiers, etc. So a lot of numbers there to share, and we'll share those on the website. Listener mailbag, we do have a few emails from our listeners. The first is from Dave Brunk. And he says, hey, fellas, I've enjoyed the last 2 weeks, the last pods from the last 2 weeks a great deal. You have moved to the top of my long run of podcast listening. Hey, that's great. And he says, I completely agree that the three-man booth of John Strong, Landon Donovan, and Stuart Holden doesn't sound like the greatest combination. I'm just grateful I don't have to listen to Lalas. It's much, much easier to mute the horrible studio show than the games. I love the idea of a north-south MLS structure. If the expansion is handled properly, I think it might be feasible. All the comments you have made regarding Florida's summer weather easily translate to Texas. And he says, I'm currently watching the Scotland against England game, and the audio is slightly ahead of the video, and it's driving me nuts. Not sure if that's a World Feed issue or Fox. Keep up the great work. Looking forward to the next pod. Yeah, the Scotland-England game, the audio was ahead by about 1 or 2 seconds. So we were hearing what happened in the game before we actually saw the video. And that's something that we've seen, not just Fox, but other broadcasters too. But when it does happen, that's a big pet peeve of mine, and I'm sure a lot of listeners out there too. The next email, Kartik, is from Scott from McAllen, Texas, and he says, I agree with your points about what MLS can learn from Liga MX. I will admit that I'm one of those English-speaking Liga MX fans. If it's not the Dynamo or RGV FC, I'm watching Liga MX. I heard Christopher mention how a split season could conflict with the NFL. Yes, that's true. But remember, in the Liga MX seasons, the Clausura is more of a minor season. There is more emphasis in pageantry when it comes to the Apertura, the fall season. It would be better to reverse that for the Major League Soccer, perhaps. He says the grand champion being in the spring season, ? And he says NBA and NHL championships would be easier to compete with than they have a Clausura-like playoff for the fall season. Not taking anything away from my Chivas Clausura win. They haven't won much in a while. Also, Christopher, it's easy to enjoy a Liga MX soccer night. You can sleep in, get everything done for the day, and at 8 p.m. your time, you can sit back, sip on a cold beer, and enjoy some evening soccer, flip around the early and late games. We're usually outside watching the games in our backyard. And Kartik, just one more comment too from Scott. He sent another email in. He says, Kartik asks why some viewers watch games on Univision Deportes Network when we have Univision over the air. He says, for my house, when USA or Mexico has a big game, Univision Deportes Network usually has a lot of pre-game coverage via Contacto Deportivo and other shows. And we are already tuned in to Univision Deportes Network. Any comments or feedback there, Kartik, on any of this?
Thank you for that information, Scott. That makes a lot of sense as far as why people keep watching on Univision Deportes. I'll admit that when I flipped off Fox the other day, Univision Deportes had some extensive pregame coverage, so I was watching there, and then I ended up watching the match itself on my local Univision affiliate, Channel 23. So I picked up on the more extensive pregame coverage on Deportes and postgame coverage as well versus regular Univision. Now, the postgame coverage, especially on Univision Deportes, which I didn't end up watching the whole thing, it was sort of late on Sunday night, was more extensive than on over-the-air Univision. Some other great points. Dave made a great point about Texas, the weather being like that. That's also been the case with DC United for years, where they've had a lot of weather delays, not as many in the last few years, but tons of weather delays in the past because of thunderstorms, and also the Carolina Railhawks, now North Carolina FC, in NASL had as many weather delays as the Florida teams and the Texas teams. So it's a general southeastern issue everywhere from Washington, D.C. south. You don't get thunderstorms like this in the northeast like you get in the southeast. Atlanta is playing indoors. It's going to play indoors in MLS, but the Atlanta team in NASL that we had when I worked at NASL, the Silverbacks, also had numerous weather delays because if you've flown through it at Hartsfield Airport in the middle of the summer, you know how many weather delays there are in Atlanta. So thank you for that point. Scott's point about the Apertura and Clausura is well taken. Obviously, they're just theories and ideas we have, but it's something that MLS should consider and think about.
Yeah. And that's something, too, that we're looking at, especially on this show, too, is focus on a lot of solutions. So not just complaining about MLS's calendar, but offering solutions in terms of also how it can improve TV ratings. Same thing with television coverage too. When possible, just trying to provide some input and some insight in terms of how things can be improved. And that's, at the end of the day, that's all what it's all about. With World Soccer Talk, the podcast and the website, is we're focusing on television coverage and everything streaming coverage, but also just trying to share the information and hopefully raise the bar a little bit, hopefully get the networks and the streaming companies improving the service, which at the end of the day improves the viewing experience for we soccer fans. And hopefully down the road, we'll help encourage more sports fans to get into soccer and enjoy the fantastic coverage that we do have from around the world through the Foxes and the ESPNs and NBCs and beIN Sports of the world, etc. So if you do have any feedback, questions, comments, anything, we'll be more than happy to read it out on air. You can email us at web@worldsoccertalk.com. And then you can hit us up on Twitter at WSoccerTalk or through Facebook at facebook.com/worldsoccertalk.
All right, Kartik, our featured topic of the week, and that is talking about Telemundo's plans for the coverage of the Confederations Cup. Now, in previous years, the Confederations Cup has been looked at as kind of one of those just tournaments that FIFA organizes just to do a dry run, just to make sure that the World Cup's going to be okay and test the infrastructure and the transportation and all those things. But this year, with the teams competing in the Confederations Cup, you have a lot of teams that are a lot of players on these teams fighting for positions, fighting to prove themselves. So you got players from Mexico, Germany, Portugal, Australia, New Zealand, Cameroon, etc. Really fighting out for this. And we were fortunate enough to be able to go down recently down to Telemundo Studios in Hialeah, out of Miami, to get their perspective and find out more details about what are they going to be doing for this Confederations Cup coverage, and how in some ways it might be different than what we'll see on Fox. And we know from previous experience that there's a lot of soccer fans that will tune in to Telemundo, even if they don't speak Spanish or don't understand Spanish, just to watch the coverage there because of the level of excitement, the passion, the energy is oftentimes much greater than it is on the English language side, whether it's ESPN in previous World Cups, or perhaps it might be Fox this summer. We'll have to wait and see what happens there. But I wanted to get your perspective, Kartik, first on some of the things you heard that you were encouraged by in terms of Telemundo's plans for the Confederations Cup.
Yeah, so they're going to first off have announcers on site at every game, which I think is very, very different than what we talked about last week with Fox, right? Last week we talked about Fox's coverage being largely studio-driven and a lot of people being left behind and even a guy like Ian Joy being excluded completely. That's not the case with Telemundo and this Confederations Cup coverage. They're sending all of their talent, with a few exceptions. They're going to be on-site. They're going to follow teams. They're going to broadcast this like it's a World Cup. So to me, that was a big takeaway. I think another takeaway is the integration, and this is a big bugaboo for me about Fox, the integration of Confederations Cup and soccer with the morning program on Telemundo, the news programs, the news divisions, the news gathering ability, which we have to have around the large international tournament. We saw that last year with the way that ESPN was able to cover the Euros from France, right? With people who are not only folks who call soccer matches or cover soccer, but are also journalists and have news gathering abilities and the resources of ABC News at their disposal in Paris as things kind of kicked off there. So that's important. Fox doesn't do that around their soccer coverage, and Fox doesn't integrate soccer coverage into all the other things they do. Now, maybe it has to do with demographics and political leanings and all kinds of things we don't want to get into, but a Fox News channel, which, believe it or not, despite my political leanings, I do watch from time to time. If soccer ever comes up in any Fox News channel broadcast, it's contempt. Who cares about this? It's a foreign thing. They don't make the effort to integrate their properties. Now, maybe that changes with the World Cup in 2018. It's the biggest thing they've done, but Fox doesn't do that. So Telemundo is doing that, which I find very, very exciting. They're going to have the bumper programs, one of which will be the Confederations Cup today, which will be done out of Miami, but they'll have so many people on site for reports, et cetera. I think that that's really important. And then also, even though their audience is probably primarily interested in Mexico, and they're going to be Mexican-American, Mexican-heavy in a lot of what they do, they are covering the other teams in the tournament very seriously. And the immense knowledge – now, you have a guy like Andres Contor leading your coverage. Of course, he knows football in and out, lives it, breathes it. He's not going to shortchange Russia just because he's not as familiar with them, right? He's going to study up. He's going to learn about the Russian side. But what we found with Fox's coverage last year of the Copa America is if it didn't involve the United States or Mexico, they really weren't terribly interested. They weren't interested in exploring the stories and themes behind other teams. They weren't interested in doing the story building about the players or coaches or the context around the tournament. Telemundo is ready to do that for the Confederations Cup. Chris, I don't want to bag on Fox too much because maybe they're going to up their game when it comes to the World Cup next year. But for me, going to Telemundo and talking to them, it just reminded me about how much coverage and what a gap I think there is between what Fox is providing and what Spanish language providers are providing and what ESPN has provided in the past. And that's a reason why a lot of people, you talked about the outset, English language outset, English language dominant people tend to want to watch some of these matches in Spanish, particularly when the English language feed is on Fox.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Telemundo has plans for 200 hours of coverage, actually more than 200 hours of coverage of this tournament, and which I believe far exceeds what Fox is planning on doing. So from the outset, there's going to be more quantity, and we'll have to wait and see about the quality of coverage. Hopefully it'll be good, though. But we did ask, I mean, going back to what you said earlier on, Kartik, about Andres Cantor, Carlos Hermosillo, Manuel Sol, and others. When we asked the question, how much of a difference does it make to have you in the stadium commentating the games, their faces lit up. They were like, oh,
Manuel Sol in particular, he just had this look where I was like, okay, we don't even have to have this conversation.
Yeah.
Right.
The former Chivas player was just saying it, I mean, in terms of what a difference. And you could see just like they started to smile. They were like, this makes our job not easier, but it enhances our performance too. It raises the level. We can see and feel the passion. We can see what's going on off the camera. There's so much more that having television coverage, having commentators in the commentary booth. And we've seen this from the NBC broadcast with Ola White and, I mean, Lee Dixon. What a difference that makes when you have somebody at the stadium. You can see the smiles and passion on the faces. And that's something we're not getting with the Fox crew. We're getting the John Strong and Stu Holden commentating the occasional game, probably mostly the Mexico games, I would think, and probably the Germany games. But this is huge. And this is a huge step by Telemundo. It's a huge statement of intent. And I'm surprised, really, Kartik, that Fox didn't decide to do it for this one, too. I mean, why not? I mean, yes, it costs money, but you're going all in on the World Cup coverage. Go all in on Confederations Cup. Get these people used to these different cities and the situations rather than having them go cold into the World Cup next year for these guys that haven't maybe been to these deeper parts of Russia. And then Kartik, I'm trying to think, I'm trying to think too.
I agree.
Yeah, and I mean, the other thing I picked up on from Andres Cantor and others is just their global perspective on the game. So we were talking to Andres Cantor, I think, off the record, and he was just saying that. Actually, no, it was on the record, but he was talking about how, I mean, for him, this is his dream job. I mean, his soccer is in his blood. He's watching 6 or 7 games a week, and most of those games have no relevance to watch what he's commentating on or what he's focusing on. It's just he's watching games for the pure enjoyment of it, as are we, I mean, you and me, Kartik, but and I'm sure as are the listeners. We're watching soccer because we love soccer. It's in our blood. And that's something I got from Telemundo, that feeling from these guys that they were talking about different teams from around the world or different players that are going to be playing in the Confederations Cup that play for different club teams from around the world. And that's something I don't get when I watch Fox. The perfect example is, I think, earlier this season in the UEFA Champions League, actually would have been, quarterfinals when Man City played Monaco?
Round of 16,
okay. And it was the Monaco game, I think the first leg, and I think it was at halftime, Rob Stone came out and was like, wow, Monaco, I had no idea. He seemed like dumbstruck by the fact that Monaco was such a great team.
If he had watched Arrival Network the previous night, ESPN FC, he would have gotten in-depth analysis from Stevie Nichol, Craig Burley, and Shaka Hislop about Monaco. They don't have rights to any Monaco games in any Monaco in any competitions, right? ESPN, but Fox has had them in the Champions League the whole time, right? For several seasons now, but this whole tournament, and the Fox crew seemed kind of dumbfounded, you know, struck by how good Monaco was.
Yeah, and the feeling I get from the Telemundo crew, I mean, talking to them both on and off the record, is that these guys know football, these guys know soccer, and are as passionate about it as we are, the hardcore soccer fans. And with the Fox crew, I don't get that feeling sometimes. I mean, some of them, yes, definitely, you can tell that they're well-versed and research a lot. But for the most part, many of them seem to be kind of mailing it in and just watching the odd occasional game only of relevance to what they're focused on. But that, I think, I'm sure some of that will come through in terms of the Confederations Cup analysis and coverage and discussion on set in Spanish language, but still in terms of the level of knowledge that these guys have globally speaking, and what how this relates to the Confederations Cup, and how, say, specific players are maybe playing better for their national team than they are from the club team, and talking about that from experience, from having watched, I mean, these players play week in, week out in the Dutch League or the Champions League or Europa League or whichever league it is from around the world. But yeah, Kartik, so yeah, overall, I was really impressed by Telemundo. They're going all in on this. And of course, Telemundo Deportes is, and some of the games will be on Universo, but these guys are part of the Comcast family, which also includes NBC Sports. So it looks like the level of commitment, I mean, NBC Sports has raised the bar on soccer coverage in the US. And the feeling I got is that Telemundo is also trying to raise the bar on their side. And they've seen all the gains and advantages and I mean, really critical praise that NBC Sports has done. And from my perspective, it looks like Telemundo is trying to do the same thing too from the Spanish language side, which is fantastic to see. Any other thoughts, Kartik, on any other lasting memories? I know that you've written a story for worldsoccertalk.com that goes into more detail, talks about the number of people that they're sending the crew to Russia, as well as having stationed in Miami. But any other final thoughts on Telemundo and their conference?
No, I think we've pretty much covered it between the segment and the articles, and it's impressive. Now we wait what Telemundo does for the World Cup, because again, it's providing an alternative for a lot of millennials and English language speakers and bilingual speakers to Fox. The annoyance among core soccer fans with Fox is pretty great. Although, look, I think Fox has gotten better in a lot of the things they've done. There's just still the overall kind of tenor of the network is loud, very partisan, very parochial, and not deep dive analysis type thing. So, and I think that's the way they cover everything. It's not just soccer, but it's not the style that core football fans, of course, soccer fans are necessarily accustomed to or appreciate. So this is an evolving story. It doesn't end this summer at the Confederations Cup. We're going to continue to be talking about this for a long time because they are both the FIFA rights holders through 2026.
One more final thought on this context, and this relates more back to Fox, is that if the U.S. had qualified for the Confederations Cup this summer, I would guarantee that Fox would probably be sending all of their crews over to commentate the games, no matter what games they were. But because the U.S. is not involved, it puts Fox in a really precarious position because they've been so much U.S. rah 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 over in the past decade, really, but in the last 5 years especially, so that when U.S. is not in this competition, Mexico is their failsafe. But if you're going to watch Mexico, you're going to watch Telemundo. So it'll be interesting to see how Fox does from the TV ratings perspective, because they're trying to embrace Mexico as the second team in the U.S. But as we've seen from the numbers from the TV ratings for games with Mexico on FS1, Mexico against Croatia, Mexico against Ireland, those numbers haven't been strong at all because most people are going to go watch it on Univision or watch it on whichever Spanish language broadcaster is actually showing those matches. But Telemundo is well positioned, especially with having Mexico play into. It'll be interesting to see what their TV numbers will be like. So, Kartik, where can listeners find you on the internet?
Find me on Twitter at KKFLA737, my name, Kartik Krishnayer, on Facebook and various places across the web, writing, including worldsoccertalk.com.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday or Friday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, Audio Boom, and worldsoccertalk.com. If you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review. And Kartik, what should they do?
Enjoy your football.